The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And welcome back to our Friday edition here of the Power Hour. And it is 12 noon our time, which means if you're on the East Coast, it's 1 o'clock. If you're in Mountain Time, it's an hour earlier than where we are. And if you're in Pacific Time, 2 hours. Sometimes people are like, I haven't had my coffee yet. Yeah, a lot of you have been chiming in. We appreciate it. And the phone lines are open. And I want to especially thank one of our listeners, Jack Kruhl, for hooking us up with Justin Noble, who joins us on the show. Now, you got to understand something. One of the first things that Biden did when he took office, day one, he issued 44 executive orders, one of which was to shut down the Keystone Pipeline. Now, after we get done with this conversation with Justin Noble, and you are welcome to call in 844-769-2944, because you may have some questions after you hear the topic of conversation. The name of the book, Petroleum 238, Big Oil's Dangerous Secrets and the Grassroots Fight to Stop It. I mean, this is a huge deal. I've been reading the book. It is a heavy-duty read. It's not for the faint of heart. Justin, first off, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Dave. Thank you.
How long did it take you to write this book? Because, man, this is like, what, 435 pages? I mean, that's what I'm looking at in my copy.
Yeah, the book took about 7 years of research and reporting. It started when someone in Ohio told me that a company was making a liquid de-icer out of radioactive oil field waste, and that was being sold on the shelves of Lowe's. And that just was a crazy thing to hear as a journalist. And digging into that led to a very long feature in Rolling Stone magazine and eventually the book. That turned out to be true, by the way. That actually was happening.
Wow. All right. So 7 years it took you to write this. I mean, this is crazy. I would not have anticipated it took that long. I mean, it took me 2.5 years to write my second book. But I mean, 7 years, my God. Now, see, you have one of the first things when I was reading in chapter one, when you open this up, what you least suspect. And if you're anywhere nearly exposed, my son, as a matter of fact, used to run what they call hot shot in the oil industry, where they would take machines and parts of machines, drill bits and stuff like that to the drilling sites. You get exposed to stuff a lot of people don't know about. He's talking about fracking. He's talking about how these methane gas, it all of a sudden just pops up in the ground and people dropping dead right there on site. The first chapter, when it gets into what happened in the oil biz in Mississippi, can you kind of give us an overview about that?
Yeah, so I think the initial realization here, Dave, is that there's a lot more that comes to the surface in oil and gas production than just the oil and gas. We imagine often the fuel, the natural gas that runs many stoves, cooks your food, the fuel that powers your car, or the oil powering, firing up many home furnaces, but there's more brought up. And the oil and gas industry brings up an incredible amount of waste as they pull oil and gas to the surface. And by waste, I'm for the most part just referring to naturally occurring things that are coming up from deep within the earth. But they happen to have some really concerning contaminants, including radioactive elements. And the industry's processes can concentrate them in really worrisome ways. So what you're starting with there, right up front in chapter one, is this issue the industry calls pipe scale. And to understand pipe scale, you have to understand oil field brine. So the industry's primary waste stream is a really salty liquid product that they refer to as brine or produced water. And I just want to give you an idea of amounts, because this is really stunning. You look at a well and you see a tank, and you might think, oh, that's an oil tank. Well, it may be if it's an oil producing well, but there's also going to be a brine tank there. Brine comes up at all wells across the U.S., 3 billion gallons a day of oil field brine. That's a trillion gallons a year. If you took that trillion gallons, a year's worth of oil field brine, and you put it into your standard oil barrel, which is like waist high, and you stack those barrels atop one another, you would reach the moon and back nearly 28 times. So this is an incredible waste stream. And it's not just salt. The name brine implies, oh, it's a little bit salty. Often out west, they call it salt water. Brine contains elevated levels of various heavy metals like lead and arsenic, and also elevated levels of radium, which is a radioactive heavy metal. And so to go back to the pipe cleaning job, as you pull something from deep within the earth, where it's under great pressure and it's hotter down there, and you get it to the surface where there's less pressure and the temperature drops, and this is what's happening as you're pulling oil and gas up, some of the metals in that brine are going to stick to the side of the pipe. And if your son did this job of hot shotting, they certainly spent a lot of time at the wellhead. And a big job at the wellhead is called the workover. You're going to have to pull that pipe up because maybe it's gotten so gunked up with this scale, with this mineral deposit, that you've got to clean it. And what the first chapter of the book lays out is this incredible story from the 90s where this cleaning was happening in a kind of backyard setting, which is common across the country in rural areas. You're a mechanic, you got a good business going, you got some know-how, and someone from the oil industry asked you to do a cleaning job, and you do it basically, you know, in your backyard. And so they were cleaning this mineral scale out of these pipes. And I just heard an ad on your program about welders being contaminated. And this is exactly what happens. You chisel. It's kind of like the doctor cleaning tartar off your teeth. You're chiseling off this hard mineral deposit on the oil field pipe. It generates incredible amounts of dust. These areas end up looking like, you know, snowfall. It's this white little material gets blown out of the pipe. Workers are breathing it in. It's landing on the vegetable gardens of the wife, you know, next door who lives beside this facility. And this stuff is falling all over the place. And the problem is it can contain very concentrated amounts of radium. And radium is a bone-seeking radioactive metal. We have the story of the radium girls. When radium gets inside of you, which it can easily do if you accidentally ingest it or accidentally breathe in dust that has radium in it, some of it's going to end up in your bones, which is a terrible place for a radioactive element to be. And that's what's laid out in that first chapter. And a really kind of wild New Orleans attorney who helped crack the code of that story.
Stuart Smith, yeah.
Yes.
I was reading it with fascination because every time I see, because he went after Shell and he went after Chevron and Shell settled, but Chevron dragged it out and dragged it out and dragged it out, trying to, you know, roll him over and bleed him dry so he'd just give up. But apparently somebody from Chevron apparently turned over documents to Stuart Smith that he used to force him into a settlement. Now, were you privy to any of these when you were doing your research? What did they admit to?
So this is and you just laid that out perfectly. I mean, Stuart has his own book. It's called Crude Justice, and it's a stunning courtroom thriller. This guy went up against Chevron. I mean, Chevron's the company that famously said regarding some contamination in the Ecuadorian Amazon, and talk about, you know, a pristine area where there's also a lot of interesting medicinal value to the plants in that area. So there's contamination. And Chevron said, we're going to fight that case until hell freezes over, and then we'll battle it out on the ice. And this guy, Stuart, beat them. So he had something going on. But these cases happened in the 90s and on into the early 2000s. So they're not still going on. I was able to connect with Stuart and speak with some of his scientific experts and look at some of the documents used in those cases. And Stuart, unfortunately, passed just a couple of years ago. So we lost a real interesting fellow and a real rare figure who's able to go against a corporation like that and actually win.
That's some pretty scary stuff. And of course, he died of natural causes, or did he die of radioactive poisoning? I mean, you just never know. In this day and age, look at Silkwood. I mean, Karen Silkwood, come on. You know, you get people that get too close to the action, all of a sudden something goes wrong. You were talking about an assassination with, you know, polonium and you know, now they use ricin. I mean, they use all sorts of stuff and they take people out. I mean, they put this little just teeny tiny grain of polonium in somebody's bar drink, which you also talked about in the book. And, you know, a month later, the guy's dead.
Oh, yeah, that's a really crazy story. And, you know, his organs fell apart piece by piece. I mean, it was a very, very painful death. That's the death of Alexander Litvinenko you're referring to there. And the best doctors on earth were looking at Litvinenko, who was living in London at the time. You have a lot of top medical facilities, and they could not figure out what poisoned him until just about the moment he died. They found polonium in a hair sample. And the interesting thing about polonium is it's building up on the inside of the natural gas pipeline system. And there's some very powerful industry documents that I use in the book to help spell that out. And this leads to another worker contamination story. This is referring to a group of workers called piggers who have to clean the sludge and scale out of the natural gas pipeline system.
Wow. Well, and see, the thing is that when you've got that going on, anybody that's exposed to that, I mean, if you're not wearing a hazmat suit, I mean, seriously, and back then they didn't even think about that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I think, you know, you bring up a really good point. The level of protection for some of these workers is not that sophisticated. Yes, a hazmat suit would be a very thorough protection, but even putting on a proper face mask and a sophisticated one, not just like a, you know, little floppy thing, but something that covers your face, looks a little bit like a scuba suit, that could provide a lot of protection. And the issue is you're breathing in material. So if you're in a dusty environment and the dust is radioactive, you're breathing in a lot of dust. And that's a serious problem because you take a lot of breaths every day, right? You drink a lot of water, you take a lot of breaths. And so it's often water and air that end up being the way that we bring these contaminants into our bodies. But these workers were not and have not been told this. So you have guys, you know, smoking cigarettes at job. That's more exposure because you're touching your hand to your mouth. Eating on the job, that's more exposure. And these are simple things. And what was really alarming in the book was just to find the lack of concern for these workers and even the really devious tricks the industry used to make sure workers stay in the dark. So one scheme that has been occurring in Ohio is workers are drawn out of prison. These are people who have been very difficult lives, very tough situations. They're just getting out of prison. They're trying to put their lives back together. And of course, you know, this is a group of people we want to help reenter society and give them a hand back into a better way of living. And they have been offered jobs cleaning radioactive oil field waste, but not told it's radioactive, not given proper protection. And these guys are getting covered in sludge. And we know the sludge is radioactive because in one instance, we were actually able to test the sludge on a worker's boots and hard hat and headlamp and determine the levels. And they're extraordinary. And so this is a really concerning exposure, and it's a really concerning scheme. Many of these workers are quite desperate. They have drug problems. So they're there in this facility moving around radioactive oil field sludge, using drugs, and just kind of happy to be having a job and not thinking at all about the exposures. And the exposures are very real. And not just for them, by the way. They're taking their clothes either to a local hotel or to their family washing machine. So this does travel beyond the workplace.
Ow. Oh, that just, boy, you can see how this spreads, folks. If you have questions, this is the gentleman to talk to ask, because he's done the research. This almost, you know, I mean, I look at my book and the research I've done into foreclosures and what really goes on behind the scenes. This is like looking at what big oil is doing, how dangerous stuff is. I mean, we're talking about radon gas. All this has stuff to do with what they've been doing when they tamper with the earth. I mean, I was blown away when I started looking at what they did in Oklahoma and just how much of Oklahoma actually has been affected by them spreading this radioactive drilling waste on pasture land.
Yeah, yeah. So this is it's the practice you bring up almost seems like it could only exist in a Twilight Zone world. But you know, the industry has this problem. They've got this waste problem, and they want the oil and gas, and we're all using the oil and gas, right? I mean, this is a really important product. It's an important part of the economy, and we use this stuff, but we don't. No one wants the waste. So the industry has thought of some very clever but concerning ways to deal with it. And kind of the best way to deal with an unwanted product is to do this little trick, and you change it from something toxic and unwanted into something like a commercial product or something usable. And as wild as that seems, that's exactly what the industry has done with the brine, trying to use it as a de-icer on roads. Well, what about all the radium? Apparently they didn't think of that, but that is a trick that they employ. And in Oklahoma, it's a really big trick because they've been able to convince the state that applying drilling waste to pasture land is good for the grasses and good for the cows. And what they've really done is set up a devastating pathway of an exposure that's really well known. It's called the meat milk pathway. And it's well known from uranium mills and nuclear industry development that when you have certain radioactive elements blowing about in the wind and they land on crops and cows eat those crops and we drink the milk or eat the meat, the contaminants can travel through that and all the way into us. And in Oklahoma, I mean, skip, you know, the random chance of this stuff blowing onto fields. They actually apply it to fields. And they stick by that process, even though some really powerful whistleblowing industry scientists spoke to me, and they said there's absolutely no science behind this idea that drilling waste is good for crops and good for cows. But the industry has certainly enjoyed the misconception that it's good, and the practice continues and is really essential way to get rid of that waste in the state of Oklahoma.
Wow. And that's just one state. I mean, you talked about Ohio, too, a day in radioactive Ohio. You just recently brought that up as well. Can you elaborate specifically on that story?
Yeah, you know, one thing I really tried to do with the book, and like you point out, I mean, it's a lot of research. That's part of why 7 years, you know, I really, I do have a master's degree in environmental science, and I really relied on reading the science and going back, not just the current science, going back 20, 30, 50, sometimes the papers done 60 years ago are more, I would say more to the point, more valid, because it was before this era when corporations really have been able to kind of worm into the academic structure and control what happens with science. So that took a while. But I also try and just bring it right home to communities and talk to people in communities who everyone can identify with. And in Ohio, you've got this amazing fire chief named Sil Caggiano in Youngstown. And he really, he has a great background in hazardous materials and radioactive materials. I mean, this guy is a hero of the community, the type of guy. So a lot of industry in Youngstown, when something goes wrong, he's there. His people are on it. And he's doing work to make sure that they are prepared for a disaster even before something goes wrong. That's the job of, you know, of firefighters, and especially a fire chief in a city like that. And yet when the fracking industry was coming in, he started to realize that all these rules which help protect him and his workers were suddenly being like kind of surgically removed, literally taken out. So an example of that is what's called CERCLA, Community Right to Know Law, talking about communities should know what sort of hazardous materials are there in their community. And suddenly that didn't apply to the fracking industry. And so that really sent a wave of alarm through through Chief Sill. And as he dug more into it, he realized that all sorts of pathways for exposures were being set up for his community regarding the disposal and hauling of oil field waste. And he started to ring the alarm bell. And that's a hard thing to do for a firefighter, because often the industry, the first thing they'll do is they'll, you know, give the firehouse a new vehicle or give them some money. And firefighters don't typically speak up. But Chief Sill did. And so that's what's, you know, part of what's happening there in a day in radioactive Ohio. We're just learning from this fire chief through his eyes some of the concerns as he learned. And this is a guy, by the way, who he describes it. You know, he goes to NASCAR events. goes to the Indy 500. He's always got a Geiger counter in his bag. I mean, this is, you know, he's a cool dude.
Oh, we all got to start carrying Geiger counters with us now. It looks like, well, that sounds like big business. I think I'll look into that. Let me make a note of that. Must have Geiger counter. Well, I do have one, but it works. It's an old one. It works off a D battery, and I'm just not sure. But I'm going to put that on my list of must have Geiger counter. Here's the thing, folks. You think I'm being facetious when I'm talking about stuff like this. I have had some minor exposure to what Justin Noble is talking about right now. His last name spelling, by the way, is N-O-B-E-L. So, you know, J-U-S-T-I-N-N-O-B-E-L. He has a .com website, but we have his book on our guest tab inside the powerhour.com. You can go there and click on it and buy the book. It is a heavy read. And I'll tell you, if you're not, I mean, you'll be somewhat slightly paranoid when you realize this book even goes into detail about radon gas. So many people are worried about this, and they have to, when you do real estate deals, you have to sign documents. I mean, obviously, Justin, you've done some research on this. And like I said, if you have questions, this is the time to do it, because Justin Noble has done all the research and knows exactly what's going on and could get those questions answered for you and possibly even offer some recommendations, albeit not legal or financial or medical advice or environmental advice. I mean, he's studied this stuff enough. He's got a master's degree in environmental science, so he understands the consequence. How do you test for radon in the house? How would you know you had radon in your home based on your research?
Yeah, great question. So there is a unit. There's a couple different units you can get. There's a company called AirThings that makes a little unit. I've got this right here in front of me. It looks like this. I don't know if everyone can see this, but a small little thing looks like a old school pocket calculator. And this can give a pretty good read of radon levels in the home. The thing is, radon fluctuates over the course of the day, over the course of a year, by different weather patterns. And just to give people a little background in radon, because it's a little bit like, well, what is this radioactive gas? So, you know, we live on a radioactive planet. We don't often think about it that way. It's not all extraordinarily radioactive, but there are radioactive elements speckled about the rocks and dirt of Earth. And when they're solid elements like uranium, like thorium, they usually stay put. You know, they're stuck in on a rock grain or a soil grain. They're not necessarily going to move around that much. But radon is a gas, and so it moves through the environment much more fluidly than some of these other metals, which don't move around as much. And so, being a gas, it's you can think of it as wafting up out of the earth all over. You put an upside down jar on the ground, pretty much anywhere on Earth, and within moments, you're going to be capturing some radon. That much of it is coming up out of the ground. And a home really is like a big upside-down jar, right? And if you are in an area with the levels in the ground below you are reasonably high, and you have a lot of cracks in your foundation or contact with the soil right there in the bottom of your home, the basement, you can have radon accumulate in your basement at concerning levels, and then you'd have to do some sort of mitigation, because radon, we don't often think about it like this, but radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer deaths in the United States, which, you know, is pretty shocking. It's right there behind smoking. You don't want it in your home. If you do have it, there are ways to mitigate it that are not that complicated, but they still are at cost, and they are can be a nuisance. Now, radon comes into play with the oil and gas industry because radon is moving with the natural gas, with the oil, as it's pulled up out of the earth. And again, this isn't rocket science. Once you understand that things are being pulled up from underground and that there are different radioactive elements underground, it makes sense that radon would accumulate and be pulled up with natural gas. The problems start to come down the line. You can go all the way down the line to the home stove. There is an EPA report from the early 70s, and this was a really interesting report to find, where they actually assessed radon levels at the home stove. And they're not going overboard with their medical alarm here, but they are saying that radon is going to be increased, it's going to increase the radioactivity levels of your home, because it is indeed coming out at the home stove. It goes all the way through the system. And depending on where you live, that can not be a problem at all because the levels are so minor, or it can actually be a pretty serious problem. There is a whistleblower in the book who used to work for Amoco, and they tested radon levels at homes that have a direct tap to the well. This is often called free gas or a farmer's tap. And it's a thing, if you live in oil and gas country, it's pretty cool because this is before the age of fracking. If they drilled on your land, you could get an arrangement where you got free gas right from that well. Now, the issue with radon is the radon has not had sufficient time to decay, meaning it blasts off radiation and turns into something else. It's still radon. You're drawing right up out of the earth. It's fresh gas. And it can be loaded with radon. And this Amoco scientist learned that the levels were actually high enough to cause health harms in people who drew gas right from the wellhead in that manner. And they did ring the alarm bell on this. They wrote a letter to Amoco higher ups. And you got to love scientists because these dudes take careful notes. So he wrote this letter. And not only did they ignore it, they actually told him to destroy the letter. I mean, this is a guy saying, hey, we've got a problem. It's going to cause health harms. And he laid out a way to fix it, which was like thousands of dollars. It was not a huge amount of money. And they told him to destroy it. And you've got his handwritten notes. I have a photocopy of the letter and it's handwritten notes. You know, they're saying destroy this. So that lets you know, like, even what these industry scientists are up against when all they're really saying is, oh, well, we've got a potential public health problem here. That's one of the, you know, to me, that's one of the most shocking documents in the entire book.
No doubt. Well, here again, you know, we're relating stuff that all has to do with what they're doing in the earth. And see, I think when you start poking around in the soils and see, I don't look at you based on what I read in this book, Justin, I don't look at you as some sort of climate change, you know, freak out there that, you know, they all scream and attach themselves to photos on walls in the Louvre and, you know, garbage like that. I don't regard this book. This is a truth book, folks. This is a book that, I mean, 7 years of research. Come on. You talk to enough people. You've seen enough going on. You understand people. And remember, people, here's something else I want to point out. You go out and get one of these air things and start playing around with this. You have to remediate the radon if you find out it's there. Somehow, if it's expensive, you have to do it. If you go poking around in stuff like this, and I'm saying this because of my research into the legal aspects of owning a home, you take one of those things and you find, you know, you have a Geiger counter, you have a radon detector, whatever, and you discover these things, you decide to sell your house because you think it's not safe. You have to disclose that. Sometimes it pays not to know these things. That way you don't have to worry about having to disclose it. But some states, I mean, most states, when you're there, you have to fill out forms, you know, radon waivers and whatnot. Have you researched that far, Justin, with this and how it affects the average American?
Yeah, you know, that's that. Yeah, that takes us into your world. And that's not a world I know so much about, you know, the legal the liabilities associated with radon in the home. So no, it's interesting to hear you talk about that and learn it from your perspective. What I can say, though, is as you were speaking, you reminded me of this other really interesting homeowner issue that comes up. There's a fascinating...
I'll tell you what, hold that thought, hold the homeowner. We got break coming up here. As soon as we get done with these important messages, we're going to be back with Justin Noble. Folks, you got to stay with us because, I mean, we're going to be slicing and dicing into some of the stuff that's going on with the economy and our environment. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mediterranean black seed oil from North American Urban Spice, exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good. It supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself. Come find the best prices on black seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2 skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Many Americans are growing increasingly concerned about the rapidly growing U.S. government deficits. Recognizing the additional printing of paper money devalues U.S. currency. To compensate, American gold and silver coins will provide wealth protection. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins delivered directly to our clients. You can reach us at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Hi, this is Linda from the Power Mall. I would like to tell you about a product that I personally take and recommend. I was very drawn to the Bone Active Topical Rub because I want to build healthy bones and prevent age-related bone loss, which so many of my friends have. Bone Active Oil contains three of the most potent mountain herbal oils known to man: sage, rosemary, and oregano. I rub it on my joints and on the bottom of my feet, and an added bonus is that it smells amazing. Not only is it potent by just rubbing it on the body, but also can be taken internally. Take advantage of the research. Use Bone Active rubbing oil and capsules to support a healthy overall bone density response. I'd love to talk with you more about this product. Call me at 877-817-9829 or learn more by visiting thepowermall.com.
And you are, my friend.
Power to the people.
We are back with the Power Hour.
Power to the people.
And it's heavy stuff.
Power to the people.
And our Friday edition, our last segment right here at 33 minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time where we are. And, of course, Justin Noble is with us, and he has a master's in environmental science and understands the stuff, and he's not one of these climate change kooks out there. He spent 7 years poking around into what big oil was doing. And of course, it involves a multitude of different things. Anytime you start doing earth exploration, you start digging for minerals. And I mean, this is what, you know, we're fighting wars in Europe because of it too. They want to dig up farmland. They want to dig up minerals. They want to dig up all sorts of stuff. And every time they do it, they unearth certain radioactive elements into the atmosphere, and a lot of these people have dropped dead. And so, you know, we welcome your calls, 844-769-2944. Wait for the prompts. Press 1 to get into the studio. Jack in Pennsylvania, you're on the phone with Justin Noble. What say you?
Yes. Good afternoon, Dave, Justin. Yeah, I live in southwestern Pennsylvania, right, but mostly closer to the West Virginia border. It's a small town, Belle Vernon. And basically, I live a quarter of a mile because it's noted even in the Rolling Stone article that Justin wrote, all of this waste is going to landfills, regular solid waste landfills. And the majority of the tonnages for the last 10 years, at least 15 years where I live, have been 80% of their intakes, and it's just not drill cuttings. There's a lot of things that go on after hours, which has been documented. But I think what the most scary part is that the components that Justin and we do discuss the raid on, but then, you know, the radon essentially that we're getting is a breakdown of the basics, the norm that came from below. And, you know, you have the uranium because Pennsylvania is very rich and we have a very high radon rate, but it breaks down through the charge. The uranium basically goes to the radium. And radium, the 226 has 5.75 years, and the 228 is 1,600 years. So this is all in this waste. Mm. Now, Justin, based on 100,000 ton a year, this is never going away. They've opened up a bottle, let the genie out, and, I mean, if you do the math, there's not enough zeros on a calculator, and it's compiling. Now, would you perceive this as a correct, you know, equation of what's going on?
Yeah, thank you, Jack. It's a great question. I'm just thinking of what an earth scientist I spoke to from Ohio told me, which is that these landfills are going to be radioactive until the sun burns out. So, yeah, what you're describing is exactly what's happening. The industry was not prepared to deal with this really worrisome new waste stream that came up with fracking, which is the drill cuttings were also radioactive. You drill a hole, you go down through the earth, and often this is just different bits of crushed rock. It's not a waste stream to worry about, but right now they are drilling horizontally through the Marcellus and the Utica shale in your areas. These are black shales, and black shales are well known to, just as you said, have an elevated signature for uranium and thorium. Amazingly, there's actually some Atomic Energy Commission and U.S. Geological Survey papers from the 1960s where they considered mining the shales, not for the oil, which we're doing now, the oil and gas, but for the uranium. So that just goes to show you, we knew for a while that these shales had a worrisome radioactive signature, and yet we're pulling a ton after ton after ton of it out of the ground. I mean, you can't drill through the shale without pulling the rock out. That's what's happening. That's called drill cuttings, and that's going to landfills in communities just like yours. It's an exceptional waste stream. Now, what has happened, what you're up against, Jack, is there is a major economic incentive here. If you're a company that deals with disposal stuff and you've got a new industry coming on the scene that produces a lot of waste, you're going to be really excited about that. And that's exactly what has happened with drilling waste and with the other waste that the oil and gas industry produces. The landfills in states like Pennsylvania, to them, this is a bonanza. This is a gold rush. All of a sudden, they got a new customer. They produce endless amounts of waste. Let's sign them up. Let's get going. And so you've seen landfills openly embrace and wanting to take this waste without concern for what's actually in the waste. And just a tidbit I think you all will be interested in, the largest landfill, the largest solid waste disposal company in the country is Waste Management. Second largest is Republic. And a quick question I'll answer myself. Who do you think is the biggest shareholder in these companies? It's the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation.
Oh my God. Yeah. Jack, what do you think about that? That's pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah.
You knew that.
This, and you have to realize, and Justin, I think you could confirm this, a lot of these landfills got energy grants to convert the landfill methane. But it's not only do we have the rate breakdown of the radium, but we have all the VOCs, the benzenes, the toluenes, the methyl chlorides, all the chemicals that are used in this process, likewise, are also in these landfills, and that has been tested, and basically it is in their leachate, and which now leachate is a very, very serious problem here because in itself it has the components and the breakdown of the radium family.
See, and Jack, I got to ask you, you know, the quality of your water, because, I mean, with these landfills, all this stuff is leaching into the water table. Justin, it is leaching into the water table. I mean, people in an area, it doesn't matter if it's Flint, Michigan or whatever the case may be. People in certain areas of the country are drinking contaminated water.
Well, yeah. Even the landfill methane that they're extracting, they're separating the solids from the liquids as this gas goes through, but they can't take the radium out. And, of course, radium goes to radon. And then myself here, we had testing done. Justin could confirm that my PB210 lead count on my property, which is surrounding because there was this black substance on the entire areas of where this industry is, inclusive of compressor stations, because the emissions. So basically, these landfills are basically puffing out the radon from their flaring operations and where they are refining the landfill methane. And a lot of these landfills leachate directly goes to sewage authorities by pipeline, and it is just what we could call dilucid as a solution. They can't treat it, and then it's discharged in, you know, to smaller tributaries. And I think Justin witnessed that what happened here in 2000.
My goodness.
Yeah, Jack. Yeah, brings up some great points. And I mean, really walking us through the topic with some great expertise there, Jack. Thank you. So pointing out, when you have oil field waste piling up in a landfill, yes, we'd expect radon emissions and other emissions blowing, you know, into the community downwind like yours. And then also the leachate. And just like you said, Jack, the leachate goes to a sewage plant. The sewage plant is not designed to process some of the really toxic or radioactive contaminants in this leachate. Because these landfills are supposed to be, you know, traditional household trash, not industrial waste. And so then the sewage plant will discharge right back into these same rivers that are relied on for drinking. And that's just what was happening there and across Pennsylvania. And that is a major, major concern.
Man, it just makes you want to get up and move. Jack, thanks for your call. We appreciate that. Yeah. Is this Jack Krull, the one that referred you to the show, Justin?
Yeah.
Sounds like you've really had some great. Heavy. We appreciate that, Jack. And you referring Justin in here because this is a very hot topic. We have callers stacking up. Kevin in Ohio, welcome to the show, sir. You're on with Justin Noble. Go ahead.
Back in the 90s, I worked as a soil scientist in strip mine of coal in Ohio, one of the two specialists. And in 92, they stopped dumping solid wastes into the ocean out of New York. And we had to do the approvals for them bringing that sewage waste treatment or, you know, sludge to Ohio. And they all the limitations we put on them, they blew them out of the park. They were allowed to spread 5 tons per acre. They'd spread it a foot thick, sewage waste treatment. And now I live in southeast Ohio, and there is drilling everywhere around me. And one of the major questions is, they never release their magic formulas they use in their fracking fluid. That's a total industry secret. Have you found out what they have in that fluid?
I so appreciate this question, Kevin, and also the really interesting example you gave. Yeah, I've been a lot of the book takes place in southeast Ohio. Like you say, there's quite a lot of drilling. There's a lot of sites that are processing oil field waste there in a really concerning manner. And no, they don't know. They have not released it to me to answer your question. And I've also am in touch with a lot of different workers who are bringing me, you know, they collect fracking waste where they can, how they can. It's often secret. So they'll fill up an old Pepsi bottle with it or something. And I've worked hard to try and get scientists across the country to answer that question you just asked. And amazingly, I mean, going to the top labs, no one will even take this waste. They have concerns. They have liability concerns. No one's been able to answer the question and help these workers figure out what's in the waste. And they're concerned, by the way, communities are concerned because the stuff is being sloshed around and spilled in their communities. But the workers are often literally in vats of it. There's a worker I met early on named Randy Moyer. Jack actually knew him as well. And he was on one of his first weeks on the job up to his shins in fracking waste. He later developed these horrible rashes and burnings that went across his body. And he passed away, unfortunately, not so long ago. And he was a young man in good shape before then. So the fracking waste puts some of these workers at serious risk. And even when they have brought the question to me, the same question you did, unfortunately, I have not been able to find a lab willing to try and provide that answer.
Wow. I do know, though, that in because of my son's experiences and what he told me, Justin and Kevin, is that when they're digging and they're trying to drill for natural gas and whatnot, and these drill bits are going down there many times, these holes will collapse and release big bursts of methane gas. And whoever happens to be in that area, if you don't have protection on, you're dead. You inhale that stuff, you're done. And it has happened on job sites that he has visited. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, to me, it would seem like if methane comes out of the ground during the fracking process, that some of these, you know, after effects or whatever kinds of studies are going to contain some sort of residual aspects of methane, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and I think you may be, because I know a bit about Texas. I spent a lot of time there. You may also be referring to hydrogen sulfide, H2S right. gas, which, mm-hmm. yeah, and like you say, I mean, that could drop a worker, you know, before he can put the wrench down. It can be quite deadly. But going back to Kevin's good point, another issue in Ohio is, you know, I talked about the U.S. oil and gas industry produces a trillion gallons of brine a year. You could line it up barrels to the moon and back almost 28 times. Where does that go? 96% of that goes to injection wells. And where Kevin lives in Southeast Ohio, there's a lot of them. And just think about this for a moment. We're pulling up the brine, which isn't just salt. It has heavy metals. The salt alone makes it very hard to work with and treat, geochemically speaking. Heavy metals, radioactive heavy metals, and it's also mixed with some of these toxic fracking chemicals that flow back up. That's a different waste stream. That's referred to as flowback. It's a really nasty brew. When you bring a well online, before oil and gas really starts surging, you get flowback, which is a lot of the chemicals used in the frack. They gush back to the surface, and this stuff can literally fire hydrant out on the workers who are tasked to then clean it up, put it into these trucks, and it goes to injection wells. Now, just think of what's in. We don't know the specific formula for the fracking chemicals, but we do know that they are designed to crack open rocks, to make rocks slippery, and to help open up the shale so oil and gas can come out. Now, you're mixing that stuff with the brine, and you're sending it back into the earth. So this is stuff designed to crack open rocks, and we're going to put it back into the earth at Southeast Ohio at injection wells, and not expect there to be problems. So again, we're taking chemicals designed to crack open rocks and putting them back into the earth as they come back up. And we do have problems in Southeast Ohio. A number of the injection wells now are leaking fracking waste. And what's interesting is they're leaking fracking waste into exactly where you would expect. These conduits that connect the surface where we live to the subsurface, such as an old gas well. And so you have these gas well owners in Ohio who are really pissed off because you've got fracking waste leaking out of the injection wells, and it's contaminated their gas. It's ruined their trade, which is producing gas. So there's a lot of issues connected to this and a lot of problems communities in that area of the country are facing.
We appreciate your call, Kevin. Thanks so much. This is something, I mean, all the studies that you've done, Justin, is there any part of the country that is safer than other parts of the country? Because I know every time you see oil wells going, it's like there may be a problem because, I mean, you see the cranks, you see the wells, and, you know, they're drilling for oil, they're drilling for natural gas. I mean, they're, you know, wherever they find a vein somewhere, the oil companies go after this stuff because there's money there. And we keep getting fed this story about, look, we have all these resources in the earth that will last us for hundreds of years, but at what cost?
Yeah, I think you describe the problem really well there, Dave. You know, the resources, again, are ones that we've relied on to do interesting things in our society to help power it. And yet the industry, the oil and gas industry, has never really been held accountable for this waste. They've never really been pushed to actually deal with it in an appropriate manner. They've never even been pushed to tell their workers, you know, to wear simple measures that would protect them from exposures. And so you still have workers out there being regularly exposed, you know, guys just out of prison shoveling sludge. I mean, this is Stone Age stuff. And yet they've relied on that because they've been allowed to. And heck, they're going to save money if they do it in that way. And, you know, one big issue underlying all of this is this just a stunning exemption the industry received back in the late 1970s and early 1980s. And it's known as the Benson and Bevel Amendments Exemption. And I draw this out to say this issue cuts across political lines. This exemption was written by two Democrats, Democratic Congressman Tom Bevel and Democratic Senator Lloyd Benson. And it enables the oil and gas industry's waste, no matter how much benzene it has, no matter how much lead, no matter how much radioactivity, it defines it by the letter of U.S. law as non-hazardous. Now, this has saved them exorbitant. I mean, the amount of money it saved them would be in the hundreds of billions, if not trillions. And the American Petroleum Institute gave an analysis early on in the late 1970s. They said it's going to save them $34 billion up front and like $12 billion each successive year. The numbers would be vastly higher than that today. And that, by the way, is saving them. So the savings there is in defining the waste as non-hazardous rather than truly accepting it as hazardous waste and trying to deal with it appropriately and protect your workers appropriately. But you're quickly led to this like problem of science, right? You've got non-hazardous, quote, non-hazardous radioactive oil field sludge. It's spread all over a worker's chest and face. Is it still non-hazardous as they're breathing in the particles? Of course not. The other issue I learned, and this is really, truly amazing, is there is a company in West Texas that asked EPA if they could import radioactive oil field waste from foreign countries. Now, I mean, the U.S., we often like to, you know, think that we're really the most developed here and we're the ones shipping our worst stuff other places. Well, in this instance, the EPA said, yes, oil field waste is, quote, non-hazardous. Mm-hmm. And so this company, which is called Lotus, they received a permission to import radioactive oil field waste from foreign countries. The first shipment came in aboard a Singapore Airlines cargo jet, a drama of radioactive soil.
Now, this going to areas like Midland, Odessa, and those West Texas oil fields out there?
So Lotus has a formally regulated site. They are permitted by the Railroad Commission, which is the regulator in Texas for the oil and gas industry. They are permitted to dispose of radioactive oil field waste into what's called a salt cavern. So they have this underground space. Which the Department of Energy has stated this is about the best place, the best thing you can do with radioactive oil field sludge and waste, put it into a salt cavern. The issue is the documents I turned up as I was researching this facility indicate that they haven't always been able to get the stuff into the salt cavern. It's a complicated operation, and we have photos that show drum after drum of material on site at that facility. So that's a concern. But yeah, that is west of Midland, west of Odessa. You're going to Andrews, Texas, and you're almost to the New Mexico border. And something, this is just, you know, maybe an interesting connection from your show, just a couple miles from this facility, which again has imported radioactive oil field waste from other countries, and no one, by the way, is checking it at the borders. But just next to it, you've got a massive solar farm operated by Facebook. And Facebook, you know, loves to be, we're green energy, we're 100% renewable, this and that. Well, guess what their solar plant is being used for? It's being used to power Shell's fracking operations. I wrote a story on that. That's a zinger.
No doubt. Eric in Missouri, you have a quick question for Justin Noble. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, I'm going to send your book down to my cousin in Oklahoma City. He's a small oily, and I just went to my uncle's memorial and all his good deeds he's going to do for early childhood education. But is there any nonprofits that are dealing with, like, people that are struggling from injury from this type of stuff, or environmental nonprofits? So I could suggest to them to kind of give some back to the areas that maybe. Now, I mean, he wasn't so big that they had their own drilling rigs. They contracted that out. But I don't think my uncle would have realized this was going on. But is there any nonprofits you could recommend that help that type of thing?
Appreciate your question, Eric. Thanks.
I really appreciate that question. Do you mean in the Oklahoma area or across the country?
Yeah, that seemed to be where they want to focus their giving in Oklahoma area. They're in Oklahoma City is where they're out of. But they started a foundation for early childhood education. It sounds like they better be helping these other areas where they profited from.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. There's actually not a lot of groups that I know of in Oklahoma that are working on this issue. And it would be great if some were to start to do that. So unfortunately, I don't have an answer for you in Oklahoma. A lot of my information came from whistleblowers within the industry in Oklahoma who have spoken out. And that just shows you, the people working on this in Oklahoma, they're doing it in secret. I don't know of a group out front in the open. And we can maybe communicate later via email, because I'd love to try and help lead you to a good group. But I don't know of one offhand in Oklahoma.
Right. Well, JustinNoble.com is his website, folks. The book is called Petroleum 238, Big Oil's Dangerous Secret and the Grassroots Fight to Stop It. It is available through our guest tab at thepowerhour.com. We're out of time for today. It's been a wonderful segment with you, Justin Noble, discussing all this stuff. I'm glad you were able to come on. And thanks once again to Jack in Pennsylvania for bringing you to the show. I would like to have you on again in the future. But in the meantime, folks, you need to educate yourself. It makes me even wonder about drilling a well, too. Just to drill for water. What you're going to want to wind up with. Okay. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back for a Monday segment with the Power Hour. And please support the Power Mall and keep us on the air. We want to celebrate our 25th anniversary next year. So if you would do that, we appreciate it. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America. Shalom, King Yahweh, righteous Son, King Yahweh, the three in one, King Yahweh.
For the past 20 years, the Power Mall has been a trailblazer, leading the way in providing our customers with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. We have worked hand in hand, helping to grow many small businesses, and we continue to provide exceptional customer service, educating our customers so they can make informed purchases. You can shop with confidence, knowing that we have personally vetted every product that we offer. Your health and well-being means so much to us. We have championed voting with your dollars, and when you shop with the Power Mall, you are helping to keep ever so important and often censored health information in the forefront. Buy from the good guys. Shop thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. We'll be right back.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding product. And he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at the Power Mall.